You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, hello, and file this under insane levels of regret. A Russian court sentenced Brittany Griner to 9 years after finding her guilty of cannabis possession and smuggling, despite her claims that she made an honest mistake and her tearful pleas for mercy, standing in a cage reserved for defendants at the Khimki court outside Moscow. Griner remaining stone-faced upon hearing the verdict. Minutes after the verdict was announced, the White House released a statement on behalf of President Biden condemning Griner's sentencing. Today, American citizen Brittany Griner received a prison sentence that is one more reminder of what the world already knew. Russia is wrongfully detaining Brittany. The statement read, "It's unacceptable, and I call on Russia to release her immediately so she can be with her wife, loved ones, friends, and teammates." Biden vowed to work tirelessly and pursue every possible avenue to bring Griner home and American Paul Whelan, who is also jailed in Russia, home as soon as possible. When given a chance to speak during Thursday's hearing, Griner, 31, with her voice quivering, acknowledged her mistake and pleaded for leniency. "I want the court to understand that this was an honest mistake that I made while rushing under stress, trying to recover from COVID and just trying to get back to my team," Griner said, referring to her packing vape cartridges in her luggage on her way to Russia in February. Well, it's I finally totally agree with Biden on something. Feels kind of good, actually. It's weird. Unity. Who would have thought? 9 years for some vape cartridges. Is that typical in Russia? If so, I guess nobody is stoned there. I guess this is a combo of harsh weed drug laws and government corruption convict bartering. In any case, it's a horrible web that Brittany got caught in. As Warren Zevon said that one time on Letterman when he was dying of cancer, "Be grateful for every sandwich, for we know not when the flood comes." I added the flood part. And hopefully they release her some way. Trump coming in saying they don't take kindly to drug offenses or something like that and offering zero empathy makes me question the soul of him. Cold-blooded comes to mind, or at least things that make you go, hmm. And they want to trade her for Victor, the Merchant of Death, international arms dealer. Doesn't that sound like a Bond villain? Victor, the Merchant of Death. Wild. Just wild. I wonder how many times she's relived the decision to throw a couple weed cartridges in her bag on the way to the airport and been swarmed with a siege of regret few of us could imagine. Those times in life when you make mistakes and live in the consequences of them, regret becoming King Kong-sized demons. We've all been there, but this is a harsh version, certainly. Also, what is strange is she comes from Phoenix, which is on this planet called Earth, where those weed things are legal. And then she went to another place on the same planet called Earth, where those things can get you locked up for almost a decade. What a strange reality. And it's just weed. I don't partake anymore, but I certainly have. And I've certainly traveled with those cartridges back when they weren't legal anywhere. One time I was on tour in Europe and I was getting quite drunk and flew from Italy back to New York at the end of this long tour. I walked by dogs in the airport, hungover, having woken up from a blackout. I'm sober now for reference. I walked by dogs. I made it on the plane. I landed in NYC where there were cops all over the baggage claim, and I looked like death warmed over and guilty for just being alive in a hot mess. I mean, seriously, they should have just stopped me on those grounds. I got to my spot in Brooklyn. I reached into my pocket and I pulled out a giant chunk of hash. And I mean giant. It was in my pocket the whole time, walking by the dogs, walking by the cops, looking like a crazy person. And I had no recollection of even acquiring it, let alone transporting it internationally. At first, I was terrified, but then it dawned on me that I was home and had all this hash. So my fear turned celebratory rather quickly. Brittany did not get so lucky. It's a ludicrous amount of time for such a tiny, tiny crime that is already not a crime at all in most places in the world. I mean, you have the most popular media outlets in the world smoking it publicly every episode. Joe Rogan celebrates it. Bill Maher does too now. Many others. This is somewhat hard to fathom. All we can do is pray for her. 10 years, or I mean 9 years. I mean, nearly a decade is a long time, and a long time to get strung up for something so innocuous and inane. The takeaway for us observing from the sidelines is be careful and don't take your freedom for granted. And let's hope she comes home soon without having to release Victor, the Merchant of Death. All right, so I have a new email address that you can contact me on, josepharthur@tntradio.live. Please keep it friendly. I'm a sensitive boy. Okay, don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime, available right now to download, keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Your voice heard here.
The government needs to step up and do its job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
There's no place like Utopia. They need chaos in order to justify radical change. Joel Gilbert sings Bob Dylan songs out on Highway 61. And he says, Michelle Obama's gonna run for president in 2024. Oh no, Joel Gilbert sings Bob Dylan songs out on Highway 61. Joel Gilbert. And he's been on InfoWars. I wonder what he thinks about what's going down with Alex Jones. Joel Gilbert singing Bob Dylan on Highway 61. Hello, my friend. How are you, Joel?
All right. Great to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Where are you in the world, actually?
I'm in Los Angeles, California.
So staying in the big city life, even though the downfall of humanity is upon us, and you have been on this subject for a very long time. I was doing some Googling around and Googled you on InfoWars, and this one came up on YouTube. They didn't take it down for whatever reason, and it was, I think, from 8 years ago, and it might as well have been from yesterday in terms of what you guys were talking about already then. The exact playbook that we're living through right now, it's quite remarkable. I mean, so you've been seeing this disaster coming from miles and miles away.
Well, that's true. I've made several films about it. One called There's No Place Like Utopia. You might have seen that one. Mm-hmm. I made a film about Barack Obama called Dreams from My Real Father about 10 years ago now that I'm pretty well known for. And the new film and book, it's a companion book and film, is called Michelle Obama 2024, Her Real Life Story and Plan for Power.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was checking out the reviews on that. There's a lot more to this film than her early years. Interesting as they are, it builds towards his thesis that Michelle has been planning for running for president and that the Democrats now know she is the only person who can lock down the black vote for them. And it was popular enough with the general public to make an election victory plausible. It's a pretty good theory, I got to say. I hadn't really considered it before stumbling upon your work, but it makes a lot of sense.
Well, I've actually, if you watch the trailer, I actually start to lay it out there. I've been following the Obamas for years, and I noticed that Michelle is actually repeating the exact same formula that Barack did to become president. For example, right. Barack was the keynote speaker for John Kerry at the Democrat convention in 2004. That's the slot that they give to the person to introduce the candidate that they think will be the nominee at the next convention. And sure enough, Michelle was the keynote speaker and introduced Joe Biden in 2020 at the Democrat convention. Barack based his candidacy on his personal story, his best-selling book, Dreams from My Father. 2018, Michelle wrote her own autobiography called Becoming, that's also now a movie on Netflix. She went on a big national book tour. And lastly, most people don't know that Barack actually started in politics with a voter registration organization called Project Vote in Chicago. And Michelle started her own, voter registration organization called When We All Vote. And she was just here in Los Angeles a few weeks ago, gave a fiery speech. So, she's the best loved Democrat. She's got 100 million followers on social media, and she's really all politics all the time. And when I read Becoming, Michelle's autobiography, I noticed that it was really a political document. It's not a autobiography per se. It's kind of setting her up for the next thing. So that's why I made the film and book, Michelle Obama 2024.
And I did watch the trailer. Another point you said was that it was like framing her political campaign around a personal story as well, though. Even though her book is largely political, as you say, it also has lots of personal storytelling detail. So they know the power of story and making things personal and in really inviting people into their narrative.
Yeah, the Obamas are very strategic. Everything they do is for a reason. And the book Becoming, you know, she tells this story. She's been doing it for years. She's just chronically tries to manipulate, especially minority and black voters, with these phony claims of racial discrimination to get their sympathy and votes. And what I did is I went and spoke to Michelle's kindergarten classmates, neighbors, high school classmates, teachers, principals, you know, college professor, work colleagues, even her mother. And there's a completely different story of Michelle Obama. She actually had a very privileged childhood. She's from a political family. Her father was a precinct captain working for the Democrat Party machine in Chicago. And Michelle spent her youth running away from the black community. She always went to schools far away from where she lived to be with elites and whites, never studied with black people, never had any experience with them. The one experience she does have, she talks about being beat up by black people and being afraid of black people because they would accuse her of talking white and acting white, and they would beat her up. She even talks about getting in a fist fight with a girl who called her an Oreo, meaning black on the outside, white on the inside, which was a big insult. So that's Michelle's experience growing up with black people, is fear and being afraid and running away from them. But she tells these stories about, you know, suffering discrimination and being held back in life. And it's just total nonsense. So I go through the whole life history and I give you a whole different picture.
That's really interesting. I mean, and how do you think they met up, the Obamas, and becoming like so sort of politically kismet? It's just such a strange twist of, you know, to talk about, yeah, well, to bring Bob Dylan into it, a twist of fate, you know,
it's like twist of fate.
Well, it's a simple twist of fate. How did those two get together then?
It wasn't a twist of fate. It was because Michelle was working at Sidley and Austin law firm when she graduated from Harvard Law. She went to this huge law firm with 2,000 lawyers up on the 47th floor. She was working with Bernadine Dorn, who was the wife of Bill Ayers. And Bernadine Dorn was one of the heads of the Weather Underground, the SDS, 1960s radical anti-American. And she was very close to Bernadine Dorn, who taught her about the politics of fear. And Michelle actually mimicked Bernadine Dorn word for word in the 2008 campaign. So Barack knew Bill Ayers from when he was in New York. And Obama came to this law firm and was a summer intern. And Michelle was put in charge of kind of showing him the ropes. So that's how they met at this Sidley and Austin law firm. And it's really due to Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, this terrorist couple from the 60s, who they remained very close to. They would have dinner at their house for years. And Obama ended up launching his political career in their living room when he ran for state Senate in 1995.
It's wild, man. I saw that too in the trailer, that her friendship with the radical and the sort of duplicating the speech and just sort of this agenda towards destroying sort of, you know, what we know to be America, to build this new thing, this new utopia that actually turns into a death station, basically. What's your take on what's going on now? Because like I said, man, the thing you and Alex were talking about 8 years ago, it's like it might as well have been you guys were talking about it today. You guys were so on the money. But now we're in it. It's playing out. And so, because then it really, I mean, you guys, I guess, could see it. You were picking up on things and your ears were to the ground. But for the majority of us, we were just sort of getting on with life. And if we would have heard you back then, the majority of us who were just listening to mainstream media would have just assumed y'all were a little off or something. But now.
Right. Well, the theory. You know,
it's clear.
Yeah, the theory of socialism and communism is that you have to destroy the existing order. You have to completely destroy society as it exists, break it down, knock it down, tear it apart, and then rebuild this perfect world from the ground up. That's their theory. It's been tried many times over the years. Lenin tried it in Russia, Pol Pot, you know, in Cambodia, Mao tried it. And everywhere they go, these are these utopians that want to build the perfect society, the perfect world. Wherever they go, they end up murdering about half the people along the way. 50 million Chinese died of starvation. Millions of Cambodians murdered. Russia, 10 million murdered. So the idea of the perfect world requires a lot of eliminating and destroying of the existing order. So you can see how the Biden administration is just pretty much trying to break down just about everything that you can imagine. And it's, I believe it's because Barack and Michelle Obama have a big influence. I think the same people came into the Biden administration that were in the Obama administration, including Susan Rice, who's supposedly a foreign policy person, but now she's in charge of the domestic agenda. You know, Susan Power, all the same gang is there. And I think if you're mad at Joe Biden and you're blaming Biden for anything, you're kind of playing into their hands. I think Biden is kind of the disposable front man, and that they're just waiting for Michelle Obama to declare for president. And she's just so popular. She's the most popular woman in America, if not on the planet. And that's their dream, is to get the Obamas back in the White House. And I lay that out, make that argument in my film and my book. And I also give the whole life history of Michelle Obama as well.
All right, well, we're going to go to a quick break. We'll be right back with Joel Gilbert right after these words on TNT.
Dolores Cahill on TNT Radio.
Give us an update from the Netherlands, and then if you wanted to touch as well on the worldwide news that we've seen about the farmers uprising in the Netherlands in the last few weeks.
Exactly. Yeah, we are now in the spotlight of the world, so to say. The farmer uprising is carrying on, and it's been carrying on now for 6 weeks, I believe, and they're not slowing down. It is coming head to head. We see a lot of extreme framing, a lot of undercover police trying to incite violence, trying to start fires on the highway and blame the farmers for it. And what is so magnificent about this uprising is that they have a huge public support. And they were talking about 70 to 80% of the whole Dutch population standing behind the farmers.
Weekends with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you.
Yeah, there's something for you at the men's shed.
Through the training.
Through the drills.
Through the driving rain.
Through borders, through bushes.
Through barbed wire.
Through doors, through windows, through walls.
Through water.
Through mud.
Through dirt.
Through pubs.
Through clubs.
Through thick and thin. Through the noise.
Through the shouting.
Through the silence.
Through it as a unit.
Through it as a team.
Through it all together.
Your local infantry regiment is recruiting. To find out more, visit your local Army careers office or go to armyjobs.mod.uk. One Army, regular and territorial.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT? Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with Joel Gilbert. Hey, Joel, I want to go into the Bahamas, the Obamas, the Obamas again, but I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan myself, and Highway 61 is on my top three for sure. I mean, there's so many great ones, but I just wanted to touch on that real quick, too. So you must love the Dylan. Huh?
Yeah, well, the and on my films, you'll find the musicians for the music are actually the same musicians from Bob Dylan's bands. So for Dreams for My Real Father, for example, I'm pretty well known for that film about Obama's background. You'll hear the violin of Scarlett Rivera, who was Dylan's violin player on the Desire album, the Hurricane song, and all that great music from the Rolling Thunder Review. So,
dude, apparently he made that, or he found her on the street and just invited her in the studio.
That's a true story. Bob Dylan ran into Scarlett Rivera just walking down the street. He said, he stopped his car and said, "I'm Bob Dylan, and can you play that thing?" She was walking down the street with a violin, and that's how it all started.
Oh, man. What a ladies' man. I got to work with T-Bone Burnett from the Rolling Thunder band. He produced one of my albums back in the day, so I got some of those stories. But, yeah, nice. Dylan is stunning. I love Highway 61. I like his Christian stuff, too, like Slow Train Coming and Saved. Time Out of Mind was a masterpiece, in my view. I mean, yeah,
they're all masterpieces.
Ones.
Well, I made four documentaries about Bob Dylan, about his different stages of his career when I got started making films before I started making political documentaries.
So blurring those worlds a little bit for a second, it's interesting because this day and age we saw a lot of bands and artists of, you know, supposedly freedom representatives like Bruce Springsteen and Rage Against the Machine, you know, fully went on the side of Big Pharma in terms of you can't come into our shows unless you get the injection. And then you have Van Morrison, who stood out, and Eric Clapton and a handful of others, but very few. And then you get Dylan, who seems to just, I guess, maybe wisely stay silent across the board on all these things. What's your take on that? What's your take on the musicians that sort of side with the agenda of control, where we're, you know, what you've been warning about for a long time, versus the ones that speak out, versus Dylan staying silent? Do you have any thought or feeling about that?
Yeah, well, look, Bob Dylan wrote the seminal songs of the civil rights movement, Blowing in the Wind, Times Are Changing, all those great songs in the 60s. But he never really was a political person. He just kind of wrote about what was going on around him. And people tried to get him to make a political stance, like Joan Baez, who was his girlfriend for some time, and him split up over that because she wanted him to lead the movement and he didn't want to have anything to do with it. He said, "Hey, I wrote the song. I'm going to move on or write about something else." Dylan was in LA in the late 70s when they had the Jesus People, and the Vineyard Christian Fellowship Church was very big in the entertainment business. So he wrote about Jesus and wrote about religion. So that's his thing. But yes, a lot of the well-known musicians like Bruce Springsteen, they fall into line with all of Hollywood, and they're, you know, very leftist in their worldview. But there's also a lot of them who don't say much that are quite conservative, and you don't hear from them very much.
But do you think there's a responsibility there, and do you have any judgment on the ones that actually go in and sort of help the cause of Big Pharma, which I view as part of the same manipulation that we're going with the socialism and the sort of controlled demolition of America? Do you have any feelings about that towards like Bruce Springsteen or anything like that?
Well, yeah, look, it's disappointing when people who you like their music, if you like Bruce Springsteen or you like some actor, and then Neil Young, for example, who I liked a lot
for a great
deal of time, he became such a leftist that it was hard to really appreciate his music anymore. So it is disappointing when they do that. I think it's unnecessary, and that they don't just stick to their art and they try to become these humanitarian politicians, but they really don't know what they're talking about, and they end up just kind of making fools of themselves. So I would say overall it's disappointing. I kind of like Dylan's approach where he just kind of stays out of it.
Yeah, I get that. I did not take that approach myself. I started speaking up and got into a lot of hot water as a result. With Neil Young, he went hard to the paint, though, with like even like railing against free speech in terms of trying to take down Joe Rogan. So that just seemed like so opposing to his message across his whole career, or what we assumed maybe his message was. So anyway, we can go back to the Obamas and what do you think motivates them? Like, why do you think they're motivated to, this whole group of people is motivated to do what they're doing, to bring in communism and this reset? Where is the motivation there? Because it
feels
so evil. It's like, why?
Okay, well, Barack Obama really is an ideologue. He was indoctrinated and radicalized in his youth by Frank Marshall Davis. Frank Marshall Davis was the subject of my film, Dreams from My Real Father. This is a guy that raised Obama in Chicago. Raised him in Hawaii, but he's from Chicago. He's one of the original black Bolsheviks out of Chicago, member of Communist Party USA. He was a Soviet agent in the Cold War. And Frank Marshall Davis raises Obama in Hawaii. Now, I make the case that this was actually his real biological father in my film, Dreams from My Real Father, because he looks just like Barack. I got inside information from his Barack's high school classmate that he was the father, and that the Kenyan Obama, the Kenyan student, was just kind of a cover they used for this situation. But Obama was raised by a Communist Party USA member and radicalized in this ideology. He went on to Columbia University, where he was friends with Bill Ayers in New York and then in Chicago. He always gravitated toward these radicals. So for Obama, he has an ideological goal that he's really mimicking people like Frank Marshall Davis and these older generation that he's trying to fit in with and trying to prove himself that he's good enough, that he's one of them. As for Michelle Obama, she actually has some kind of deep psychological issues that I think are driving her to run for the president. She has a psychological dark side that makes her seek more and more power and influence. And it's because of, she calls it imposter syndrome, but it's, it has to do with something she acquired in childhood. Her parents registered her at an elite elementary school instead of the school where she lived, illegally enrolled her. And so she always felt she didn't belong everywhere. This happened again and again in her life. She was at Princeton and she had a job, a work study job as a babysitter, which wasn't legal. So she's always done things and had jobs created for her. So she always feels that maybe she's not good enough. So she always has to seek more and more power. That's why she's on all these magazine covers, talk shows, Netflix, endless promotion, self-promotion to kind of prove that she belongs. So for Michelle Obama, she's not really an ideologue. She really doesn't have any original thoughts. She just repeats whatever talking points there are. But she is someone that seeks power and influence in order to prove that she belongs in this group. So I think she is running for president. And I think, if she wins, she's going to pretty much follow the Democrat talking points, the global elites. She'll want to do everything she can to fit in and show that she belongs. So there's a lot of deep issues, but both Barack and Michelle were very close to these 60s radicals, Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers as well. So there's a whole history of radicalism in Chicago. That's where the Communist Party USA was founded in Chicago. And that's where their ideology comes from.
That's an interesting breakdown. I mean, she's certainly not alone in people seeking attention to cover up childhood wounds, so to speak. I mean, that describes most everyone affected by social media these days. Let me go to headlines, and we'll be right back with Joel Gilbert after the headlines on TNT.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Three people have been shot dead, and a fourth has been critically wounded during a mass shooting in Australia. Rescuers are still trying to reach a group of miners trapped in a flooded coal mine in Mexico. It's understood they breached an area filled with water, causing an internal wall to cave in around them. China has started firing missiles in the sea and in the air around Taiwan as Beijing launches its largest ever military exercises directed at the island.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And we're back with Joel Gilbert. What do you think of Pelosi going to Taiwan and now the tensions with China? Do you think that this is a move to create more and more chaos and before November to create more lockdowns?
Well, I think Nancy Pelosi kind of freelanced a little bit on going to the Far East and scheduling the trip to Taiwan. Once it became public and they told her, you know, China said she can't go, that's what kind of blew up the whole thing. I think Biden was against her going, and it ended up, you know, causing a lot more harm than good. But Nancy Pelosi, you know, she's 82 years old. People don't realize that because of the hair and the makeup and everything she's got going, but she's 82. You know, Mitch McConnell is over 80. Biden is almost 80. We have a whole lot of 80-year-olds, you know, running things that are not going to be around much longer. And I think it's very clear from every day in the newspaper, every commentator, politicians, they're all saying every day they do not support Joe Biden to run for president again. Clearly, they think he's too old already. He's clearly a transitional person, a placeholder, a front man. And I'm convinced that they're just holding, you know, he's there to hold down the fort until Michelle Obama runs and she's ready. And I go through all that in my film.
Well, so let's talk about her childhood a little bit, and also the odd conspiracy that's around that she's trans, like she's transgender. Have you heard that? I mean, you must have heard those rumors. That's a pretty popular.
Yeah, it's funny. I get that. People ask me a lot. Look, it was a comedian, Joan Rivers, so a few years ago. Right. Someone asked her, do you think there'll ever be a gay president? And she said, "Oh, we have one, and Michelle is transgender." Obviously, she was joking. And that created a whole social media firestorm and videos, but it's not true. Michelle was born female and she is female. I actually found, believe it or not, I found from the state of Illinois, I got Michelle's original voter registration card from 1994, and she actually registered to vote as a man. She circled M under sex instead of F for female. And then in 2008, she changed her sex back from male to female. It was clearly an accident. But anyway, Michelle is female, and it was just, you know, very mean-spirited joke. So Michelle is a phony, but not in that way.
Do you think those kind of conspiracies get planted to offset people that have suspicions and raise valid concerns, but then these are kind of like controlled opposition pieces to make people who question things seem crazy?
No, I think that was just kind of something that went on social media and kind of took off because Michelle was always bashing America. I think it was a way for people to vent and say, oh, well, she's transgender. Obviously just a joke, but then it took off from there.
Yeah. All right. Well, who do you think will be running against her then?
Well, it looks very clear that, you know, on the Republican side that Donald Trump is going to run. And unless the January 6th committee or the Justice Department can do something to stop him from running, he looks like a clear path and a clear winner of the Republican nomination. Every day of the Biden administration makes Trump look better. Now,
right.
If Trump runs, and I believe it'll be against Michelle Obama, he'll have have all the media against him. Every time he criticizes Michelle, he'll be called a racist, a sexist, and a hater. But he does need to say things like, for example, I go into my book and my film. By the way, you can get the book Michelle Obama 2024 on Amazon.com, and the film you can live stream or get the DVD from SalemNow.com. But I go into her professional career in Chicago, and two things really stand out. She was the assistant planning commissioner for the city of Chicago under Mayor Richard Daley. And that was 1991, 92, 93, when they were doing something called redevelopment. And that was just a nice way of knocking down homes of mostly black people that lived in these projects. They knocked down Cabrini Green projects. Michelle made 20,000 blacks homeless and told them it was good for them, and gave away the land to Democrat donor developers like Tony Rezko, who then gave some of the money back to the politicians. Having proven her callousness, Michelle was hired by the University of Chicago Medical Center to head up something called the Southside Health Collaborative. And this was an effort Michelle did to prevent the black Southside community from using the University of Chicago Medical center's emergency room. Michelle would actually put them in these vans and dump them at these crappy neighborhood strip mall clinics to prevent them from having access to good health care. So Michelle has a history in Chicago of selling out the Black community. She sells them out. And as a politician, she pretends to be one of these ordinary Black folks that she spent her life exploiting. So any Republican like Donald Trump, all they would need to do is say, you know, Michelle, are you going to apologize for what you did to the Black community in Chicago? You knocked down their homes. You took away their health care. When are you going to apologize? Now, that would open up a whole can of worms, and it would show that Michelle is not who she's pretending to be.
Well, yeah, it's certainly getting in the ring with King Kong if they do that. You know, I mean, he is going to go in, and he's got a track record for it, and he's the man for the job. What's some of the feedback you're getting from the film? And also, what motivated you to make this film? How did you sort of see this coming, and what surprised you in the process?
Well, in terms of feedback, I just screened the film actually in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club a few weeks ago. And the feedback I get is people say, wow, 80% of this, they had no idea. They just did not know any of this thing about Michelle's history. So that's pretty common. I get a lot of that. And the reason I made the film is as I said, I noticed that she's doing everything Barack did to prepare to run for president. And I saw that there were 6 biographies written about Michelle, full-length biographies, and they're all just very reverent. They just kind of repeated her story or whatever she said. And so I realized if I didn't look into Michelle's background and tell her real story, that no one would. So that's what got me into it. And I just, you know, I read her book, Becoming, which is really a political document. I went to Chicago. I talked to all these people that grew up with her, knew her, her teachers, and the co-workers, and I realized it was a very different story, and that's why I put it all together in this film and book, Michelle Obama 2024.
What about her childhood? Like, when you went into deep into her childhood, did you find anything out that surprised you?
Well, I was surprised to see how privileged she was. She was, you know, her parents always sent her to schools away from the Black community. They made sure she didn't have to study with regular Black folks. She was in a dance class. She was studying tap and dance from age 7. She went to this magnet high school and blatantly lied about it. She said, I went to the neighborhood schools. In fact, she took 2 buses an hour and a half from her house to go to high school. She said, my parents couldn't afford private schools. Well, her brother went to a private Catholic school, and she's not even Catholic. So it was just a very privileged childhood from a political family. Her father was a precinct captain, so she would go around with her father when he was trying to get people to go out and vote for the Democrats. So, you know, it's a privileged childhood where she was also befriended Jesse Jackson's daughter, Santita. So she even says she grew up in Jesse Jackson's house when he was running for president. So you have a person who's a very privileged, very political, who doesn't have anything in common with Black people. She never had any of their experiences or grew up with them. She was afraid of them. And I think when later in life, she projected her fear of Black people onto the rest of America.
It's really interesting.
You know, it's just a very different story than she tells. I mean, one of the stories she's been telling for years, for example, she talks about how her high school counselor racially profiled her as regards her applying to Princeton University. She said the counselor said, you're Black, maybe you're stretching going to Princeton, trying to get into Princeton. Well, it turns out, I found out her high school counselor was a Black woman, church-going assistant principal, Black lady named Nan King. So there's no way that she racially profiled her. So Michelle is very manipulative. She's been telling these stories of, you know, being held back in life because of her skin color to manipulate Black voters, when really she spent her, you know, her childhood running away from Black people, living in fear of Black people, and then her professional career, as I mentioned, selling them out. So Michelle, as a politician, when she campaigned for Barack in 2008, she made up a whole different story, pretending to be one of these ordinary Black folks. But she never was, and she has no street cred, really. She has no street cred in the Black community, much like Barack. black people did not consider Barack to be black because he grew up in a white family. He's from Hawaii. And Michelle is very much like Barack in that way. She really does not understand black people, never had any experiences with them other than being afraid of them.
Well, so you mentioned that Trump would use these kind of things as weapons in the campaign, and that seems obvious, but she will also have her weapons, of course. What do you think the result would be in a battle between her and Trump?
Well, I think we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, I think it would be an epic battle because you're going to have 95 or 99% of the media supporting Michelle. Trump is not going to have the same access to his voters as he used to have. He's not on Twitter anymore. He used to be able to send a tweet, get to 100 million people or whatever it was, 80 million people immediately, and all the news stations would cover that tweet. So he had incredible ability to reach people, and he'll be largely cut off. So it's going to be very difficult for him to communicate. But you'll have Michelle appealing to nostalgia. She'll say, oh, remember how much you loved the Obama years. Remember how much you loved it and how great it was. And I'm going to bring us all back together. You know, she'll try to sell herself as some kind of healer like Barack did.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be an incredible battle. And, if the voting is fair, I would expect Trump to win that one.
Yeah, it's interesting because before, seeing your book and hearing about the film and doing a little research on it, I just assumed, Trump's going to just waltz into the White House if the election is vaguely fair. But I don't know, against Michelle, like, that could be tough because they could sort of, what's the, when a vampire does something, glamour. They could end up glamoring America with those Obama years. It could work.
Yeah, look, Michelle is so popular. I mean, they would just say, she's ahead by 20 points in every swing state. And you would believe it because she's so popular. It's believable. And then if she won, the election night, she won everything by 15%. You'd think, well, maybe she did. It's plausible. Yeah. She's plausible.
Well, it's more plausible than Biden, actually, and that went through. I mean, a lot of people didn't believe it, but it went through, and a lot of people did believe it. And your point about Trump not having the same reach is valid, although I think his reach will increase on Truth Social. I think those alternative social media apps will get bigger. Of course, they won't touch Twitter, but the news will still cover what he says because they need ratings. You know what I mean? They're not going to like silence him because those ratings are too juicy for them. Let me go to another break. We'll be right back with Joel Gilbert after these words on TNT.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
When people talk about the D.C. swamp, they're usually referencing Congress. And although the House and Senate are replete with more than their fair share of swamptillions, 95% of the swamp is safely ensconced in the executive branch bureaucracy, where poor performance not only is not penalized, it's a prerequisite to promotion. Think all the hardcore commiecrats that President Obama appointed to the senior executive service of every department on his way out the door. Case in point, the top-to-bottom corrupt FBI. Testifying under oath at the Senate today, FBI Director Christopher Wray admitted that the special agent in charge of the Detroit field office, who was responsible for the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping hoax, where the majority of the people in the van were FBI assets, has been promoted to direct the Washington, D.C. field office in charge of, wait for it, investigating the January 6th non-surrection, which was also an FBI honey trap. For MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
We're at a party. Three little kids were playing in the pool, all under five. Adults were busy talking, glanced over, noticed a little one underwater. I think she needs help. That's how easily something can happen. It only takes a few seconds. Don't worry, the party had a happy ending. But we need to remember, fence the pool, shut the gate. Teach your kids to swim, it's great. Supervise, watch your mate, and learn how to resuscitate. I'm Laurie Lawrence. Kids Alive, do the five.
During the pandemic, 129 billion unrecyclable masks were used and thrown away every month. Over 3 billion masks now pollute the oceans. Let's not turn a blind eye to this disgusting plastic pollution.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we're back with Joel Gilbert, whose film Michelle Obama 2024 is also a book. It's out now. You can get the book on Amazon, and the film you can get where again, Joel?
Film, you can get it live stream or the DVD on Salem Now, salemnow.com.
Salemnow.com. It's going to be compelling. I recommend it, even though I haven't seen it. But I have seen the trailer. It looks epic. And talking to Joel, and he's a big fan of Bob Dylan. He's got a Highway 61 cover band. And Highway 61, man, that's one of the best. That's what made me want to be a singer-songwriter when I first heard that. This the epic train, the epic lyrics, you know, just the open stream of consciousness. It blew my mind.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I've had, I have a tribute band for Bob Dylan, and I've had
as many as
four of his musicians in my band. So I would tell the audiences, I would say, Bob Dylan's band has the original Bob Dylan, but I have the original band. So it's pretty cool playing music with those guys.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm friends with Charlie Sexton, his longtime guitar player now. And every time I see him, you know, sometimes we'll run into each other and we always go up to each other, haven't seen each other in months, and just go, why do you always do this? You're doing it again. You know, like a dysfunctional relationship, like you're pretending you're in a fight. Why are you doing this? It's just a funny in joke, but it's just like get all emotional, and it's funny. He tried to like get out of that band for a second, and Bob kept going, no, you got to come play with me. He wouldn't let him leave. Charlie's amazing. Shout out Charlie Sexton. So listen, man, I want to ask you about Alex Jones, if that's okay. What are you okay to talk about Alex?
Sure.
Okay, great, because I know you've been on InfoWars and you've done a bunch of interviews there, and you even, I think, hosted episodes. What do you think with what's going on with Alex now, and can you believe the thing with the lawyer leaking all of his information? That must also blow his conspiratorial mind, and I'm not saying conspiratorial in a slight way, but I'm just saying, like, that doesn't seem plausible that the lawyer accidentally leaked all of his information, does it? It's like, so anyway, what's your take?
Well, a couple things. Look, Alex Jones had and has a huge, huge loyal audience, and that's why I like being on the show. I couldn't get interviewed by CNN, so people like Alex that would have me on, I'd be happy to do his show. You get a great audience response. They did. Now it's been about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now, maybe 4 years or three since they deplatformed him on the basis of his comments about the Sandy Hook thing. Now, people can say on the left, if people say something dumb, they kind of apologize for it and everybody accepts it and move on. On the right, Roseanne Barr, of course, Alex Jones, he said something dumb about the, Sandy Hook thing. I don't know what he said exactly, but I guess he questioned whether it was real for a while.
I think, whether it was real.
Yeah. Then he admitted that, no, it was real. So to me, it's just free speech. And I don't quite completely understand how a radio show host can be prosecuted or sued for saying something dumb, especially if he admits, yeah, that was pretty dumb. I guess I was wrong about that. So I don't really quite understand it, but I think the attempt to silence him by the conservative media not standing up for him when he was deplatformed was a very bad sign of things to come, because more and more conservatives then got deplatformed, including all the way through Donald Trump. So that's where they really kicked it off, and they're still trying to persecute Alex Jones over some dumb things he said on the radio for a very short time, is my understanding. And then he corrected himself. So I think on The View, they say dumb things and then they apologize and they move on. So it's quite unfair what they've done to him.
I'll tell you what, man, when he got deplatformed, that's when my sort of red pilling journey began. I'm late to this party, by the way. I'm a noob, you could say, seeing through a lot of this stuff. So, you know, I'm playing catch up here a lot. So, but, when they silenced him, because I was not really fully red-pilled, I was like, hey, that kind of got me out of the trance, because I was like, well, and I didn't really know much about him. I had watched him a few times. I thought he was entertaining. I thought he was amusing. I thought he was a bit nuts, whatever, you know, but it never occurred to me that they would try to silence somebody, because that wasn't even in anyone's mind yet that you would do that. That was still, we were still in the America that I don't have to agree with what you say, but I will defend with my life your right to say it. That was what I grew up with. And that's what you grew up with. That's what we all grew up with. So
if you don't like it, don't listen. There's lots of other channels. You don't have to platform and silence the person. Just don't listen if you don't like it, you know?
It blew my mind. And what blew my mind after that, because I also, there wasn't so much social shame if you said, there wasn't quite that buildup of social shame if you said something against the narrative yet. There was a little of it. And I remember writing something on social media, like, whatever happened, I don't agree with what, you know, I wrote that thing and I got very little feedback on it. And it just was like nothing. And then I noticed no one else was talking about it. And then so I just kind of like let it go. The next thing was Jordan Peterson. I quoted Jordan Peterson on something and somebody came down on me like, how dare you write about Jordan Peterson? Like he was some like alt-right crazy dude. Well, I thought he was a self-help author, like 12 Rules for Life. I like self-help books. To me, this was another self-help book I was reading. I was like, wait, what? And so, you know, now it evolves all the way to Neil Young going after someone who is completely middle of the road, Joe Rogan. You could be none more middle of the road than Joe Rogan, clearly,
and don't
by
forget,
the level of his popularity.
Yeah, don't forget Neil Young is a Canadian, and so was
right.
Joni Mitchell. They're Canadians
right.
Recommending that we, you know, silence American free speech.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, dude. I had a great joke when Neil Young went for Rogan and it only lasted for a little while. But the joke was, turns out Crosby was the cool one all along. And I thought that was a pretty funny joke. But then Crosby, of course, joined Neil Young. So the joke fell off. But
yeah,
it was good for a minute. It didn't last long. So what's next for you, man? So what do you think is going to happen with this film? How are you going to play it out in the coming years? And when do you think Michelle is going to announce her candidacy?
Okay, sure. Well, you know, I'm pretty much promoting the film. I'm doing like 4, 5, 7 interviews a day all over the country and on camera and doing some film screenings around the country. So I think this is going to continue for some time. I believe that probably next spring, Michelle Obama will say something to the effect of, actually, she'll probably say it word for word. She's going to say, you know, I hate politics, but I love this nation and I love all of your children. And people have been asking me about running for president. So I'm going to form a committee.
I don't want to do it.
I'm going to form a committee and then we're going to explore this for a couple months and then I'll decide. That's exactly what's going to happen. She's going to pretend to be reluctant, but in fact, she's been preparing very heavily. She's been preparing very seriously and working it for some time. So that's what I think is going to go down.
And how much attention do you think they're paying to you and your film? You know they're sitting there watching it. You know they're analyzing it. You know you're going to have like the CIA on you and all that. I'm just kidding. I don't know that they're going to do that, but you know they're paying attention. What do you think?
Well, I've had the I've had the FEC, Federal Election Commission, investigated me. They got a complaint and investigated me about my last Obama film. Then they ended up dropping the investigation at the end. So, you know, I guess I'm sure they're aware of it by now. And I think Michelle would like to stay under the radar for as long as possible. But I think I've outed her and I've explained that she is running for president and that her entire life story that she tells about all these obstacles and people holding her back is total nonsense. And that Michelle is a very, very political person with a political agenda who is planning to run for president. And when she does, everybody's going to cheer. I think she fits the exact, you know, formula of what the Democrats are looking for, an ethnic candidate, a female. They're kind of phasing out their old white male people like Andrew Cuomo and Biden. They're trying to get rid of them and have a younger generation of ethnic people. And Michelle, you know, fits it very well. She's very, very popular. And I think you know, she is running for president. And but I think my book and film will show a whole different life story about what she's really all about.
Well, I'm glad you made it, man. And I'm really happy that you came on the show. And, you know, another thing with the Michelle Obama is it's that family legacy thing that happens. The Bushes, the Clintons, you know, it goes in line with that legacy situation that somehow Americans are attracted to.
Well, we're not the British, you know, it's not a monarchy, but it sure feels like it sometimes. The Bushes did it. The Clintons tried to do it. Michelle yeah. will try to be her own person. I think Barack will stay in the background and Michelle will try to be her own person as best she can because she has a history of being an executive. She's going to have her brother involved, who is a basketball coach, and try to set out a campaign based around her life story, which is about her life story, which is false. Anyway, Amazon.com for the book, SalemNow.com yep. for the film.
All right, Joel Gilbert, thank you for coming on, and we will see you again soon. Thanks, everybody. Keep listening to TNT. We'll be right back after these words.